Welcome to another week of our 4.5 year verse-by-verse journey through all of God's Word, and invite you to join me in 2 Samuel, chapter number 15. We're going to start at verse number 7. We are looking now at the coup, the attempted coup, of King David's second son, third, I guess, if you count the one that apparently has passed from the scene. And the manner in which it failed. Now, this is, I believe, all related back to the sin of David with Bathsheba. I believe that set the background to which all of these things take place. The year, as far as I can tell, is the Jewish year that started in the fall of 983, and then it goes until the fall of 982. Just so happens that that was a sabbatical year, a year in which all Israelis were supposed to take the year off from their normal work. They only did what was absolutely necessary. And so I think that may have contributed to this year being picked by Absalom. So as you remember the story, Absalom was angry about how his older brother seemed to have gotten away with the rape of Absalom's full sister. And so he bides its time and eventually executes his older brother. He then runs off to the north to hide out in his grandfather's territory. But eventually, he wants to come home. And that is arranged through Joab, who is basically his cousin. Now we're ready for verse number 7. After Absalom has been back, he goes through the process of stealing away the hearts, the devotion of the people of Israel. He does this by basically insinuating that David is not a fit ruler, he's not giving people justice in a timely fashion or a timely manner, and that he would be so much better in the kingdom as its king. Here we go. 2 Samuel 15:7. At the end of 4 years, Absalom said to the king, "Please, let me go and pay my vow, which I have vowed to he who is in Hebron. For while your servant vowed a vow, while I lived in Geshur in Aram," that would be his grandfather's territory, northeast from the Sea of Galilee, it is considered part of the Aramean region north of the Promised Land. "So I vowed a vow while I was living in Geshur in Aram, saying, 'If he who is will indeed bring me back to Jerusalem, then I will offer worship to he who is.'" So this is the setup. He says, "I made a promise to God when I was living up with Grandpa that if God would bring me back here to Jerusalem, that I would go and make a sacrificial offering, an act of worship, an act of thanksgiving to God at the headquarters of the tribe of Judah, the place where he was actually born, down in Hebron." And so all of this makes good logical sense. It is a very plausible story. "So the king said to him, 'Go in peace.' So he arose and he went to Hebron. But Absalom sent secret messengers through all the tribes of Israel, saying, 'As soon as you hear the sound of the trumpet,'" and this is the shofar, this is the ram's horn trumpet, it is the trumpet that is used to signal things like the beginning of the sabbatical year, the beginning of the Sabbath, the adoption of a king, things of that nature. And so as soon as you hear the sound of the shofar, then say, Absalom is king at Hebron. So this is the plan. He is going to have himself declared king at the Judah capital city, just like his father had done at the beginning of his reign. And then from there, he will move on Jerusalem and get rid of his father and get rid of anyone else that might oppose him. But his last 4 years has been spent cultivating support for him as king in place of David. Verse 11. With Absalom went 200 men from Jerusalem who were invited guests, and they went in their innocence and knew nothing. Now this is the situation where not everybody is in on the coup. Absalom has a trusted network that he has reached out to, that he has prepared, that when the time comes and the shofar is sounded, that the message will go out to all of the people in this network. It is time to show your support for Absalom. But there are others who are going to be suddenly aware of this coup. And I think the anticipation of Absalom is they'll go along with it because it's a fait accompli. It's an accomplished thing. Verse 12. So while Absalom was offering the sacrifices, again, we're living in a time when there are sacrifices happening at multiple places throughout the land of Israel. And so there is a high place, there is a worship site at Hebron. So while he was doing the sacrifices in connection with his own coronation, he sent for Ahithophel, the Gilonite, David's counselor from his city Gilo. And the conspiracy grew strong, and the people with Absalom kept increasing. So Ahithophel becomes one of the key players in the coup. He has been one of David's advisors, probably for the last 36 years or so, because this is roughly David's 36th year on the throne. 36 years since David himself was ordained or anointed as king here at Hebron. So the conspiracy, the coup plot of Absalom has gone out into some of David's closest advisors and long-term supporters. Verse 13. A messenger came to David saying, "The hearts of the men of Israel have gone after Absalom." Now, Hebron is roughly one day's travel south from Jerusalem. So somebody that could get on like a mule or was a, we'll call it a professional runner, like a courier corps person, they could get back to Jerusalem in part of a day. And so as soon as this trumpet sounds and the coup is obvious, this guy takes off from Hebron, gets to Jerusalem, and lets David know there is a coup in process. Then David said to all his servants who were with him at Jerusalem, "Arise, let us flee, or else there will be no escape for us from Absalom. Go quickly, lest he overtake us quickly and bring down ruin on us and strike the city with the edge of the sword." So David wants to evacuate as many people as possible from the city of Jerusalem, particularly his supporters, his administration. He probably gets this warning toward the end of the day that the coup started on. No doubt, Absalom and his supporters would have spent the rest of their day feasting and congratulating the new king. And so the expectation is he will move north toward Jerusalem the following day. So the night before that, the night of the coup, David is beginning to get his people ready to evacuate. The king's servants said to the king, "Behold, your servants are ready to do whatever my lord the king decides." So the king went out and all his household after him. The king left 10 concubines to leave the house. Now, we've talked about this idea that David has violated the principle given by God through Moses for kings to not multiply to himself wives and concubines. The difference between a wife and a concubine seems to be that a wife has much more privileges, rights, and responsibilities than a concubine does. Most obvious one would be that the sons of wives would be in the hierarchy of those who have a right to the throne. Concubines, on the other hand, do not have that sort of status. They are not guaranteed a child with the king. They've got rights and privileges lesser than that, but they don't seem to have, their kids don't seem to have any right to the throne. So David knows that the household needs to keep running. So he leaves 10 of his concubines to run the household. My guess is he figures they are safe because they and their children are not tied into the line of inheritance to the throne. So why would Absalom take any notice of them? I think that's what David had in his head. We'll find out that Absalom does not keep up to the standards of morality in regard to such a situation. So the king went out. He left these 10 concubines to keep the house. And the king went out and all the people after him, and they halted at the last house. Now remember that the Jerusalem we're talking about right now is the little oval hill, the little oval fortified city that is south of the modern-day Temple Mount. You can actually go to Jerusalem now. You can go to the archaeological park called the City of David, Ir David. And you can see a lot of the archaeological connections to this time period for the City of David. The palace, the royal complex, seems to have been in the northern part of this ancient city of Jerusalem. So when they evacuate, they evacuate to the east, and they stop at one of the last houses, apparently by one of the gates or just outside the city, that's heading toward the Mount of Olives, which is east of the city, across the Kidron Valley. Now, what are they waiting for? David wants to make sure everybody gets evacuated. He is very concerned about that. So all his servants pass by him, all the Kiratites, now those are the sworn bodyguards of David, remember that? All the Pelethites, those are the courier corps, the runners, and then all the 600 Gittites who had followed him from Gath passed on before the king. When David took over the Palestinian or the Philistine coastline and brought it into his kingdom, some of the Philistines were apparently quite happy that they could become part of his kingdom. Some of them converted to the faith of Israel. And at Gath, there were 600 of these Philistines, ethnic Philistines, who apparently did convert. did swear their allegiance to King David and even joined the military. So there is a 600-man Gath Philistine military unit that has sworn their allegiance to David. And so the king said to Ittai the Gittite, who is the commander of this Philistine military unit, "Why do you also go with us? Go back. You stay with the king," meaning Absalom. "You're a foreigner," meaning you're not an Israeli, "and also an exile from your home." So you're staying here with us in Jerusalem instead of at Gath. You've been living away from the home of your birth. "You came only yesterday." Now, that's metaphorically speaking. It's not like just yesterday on the calendar they showed up. They've been with David ever since David took over the cities of the Philistines, and these guys converted and became part of his entourage. So, "You came only yesterday. Shall I today make you wander about with us, since I go I know not where? So why should I force you to leave your new home and to come wandering with me? Who knows how long and where we're going? That's not your responsibility. Go back, take your brothers with you," meaning the other soldiers, the 600, "and may he who is show chesed, steadfast love, and faithfulness to you." You can tell in this interchange, this exchange between the two men, that they share the same faith. Ittai and at least a very large portion of his men must have converted to Judaism and have been thinking of themselves as Jewish. Verse 23, "All the land..." Verse number 21. "But Ittai answered the king, 'As he who is lives.'" So he takes this oath in the name of he who is. That tells you he believes in he who is. "And as my lord the king lives," so you can tell where his allegiance is, "whether for death or for life, there also will your servant be." So it's basically, "I will always be by your side, sir. That's my oath before God." And so David said to Ittai, "Go then, pass on." So he gives him permission to join the evacuation force. "All the land wept aloud as all the people passed by, and the king crossed the brook Kidron." Again, that's the stream on the east side of the city of David. It separates Jerusalem from the Mount of Olives. "And all the people passed on toward the wilderness." So they cross the Kidron. They're now on the Mount of Olives, and they're getting on the road that goes northeast up and over the peak of the Mountain of Olives, and then down toward the Jordan Valley, down by the city of Jericho, where there is a crossing point into the eastern portions of the Promised Land. Verse 24, "Abiathar came, and behold, Zadok came also with all the Levites, bearing the Ark of the Covenant of God." So we have two priests, remember. Both priests are in attendance here, which is interesting. That must mean that they were both in Jerusalem at the same time, because this is all happening suddenly. One of them is typically over at Gibeon, where the tabernacle is located. But I suspect, this is only my suspicion, is that that Absalom is carrying out his coup in association with the beginning of the Jewish year in the seventh month, which is also the time when kings start, kings of this time period considered the beginning of their year. It was the month of feasting. It was the month when people would gather for the Feast of Tabernacles early in the month. And so my suspicion is everybody was probably getting ready for the holidays of the seventh month when this coup goes off. That's just my suspicion. But anyway, these two priests bring the Ark of the Covenant with them, God's throne, because they figure God needs to evacuate the capital city as well. They set down the Ark of God until the people had all passed out of the city. Then the king said to Zadok, "Carry the Ark of God back into the city." So take God's throne back in to the palace, back into the courtyard, back under the tent that's been prepared for it, because God is not evacuating the city. He is not abandoning the capital. "If I find favor in the eyes of he who is, he will bring me back and let me see both it and his dwelling place," meaning see the Ark of the Covenant and the palace, the city of Jerusalem, the capital. "But if he says, 'I have no pleasure in you,' behold, here I am. Let him do to me what seems good to him." Now you've heard me say, I think David has been changed by what happened between him and Bathsheba. And he has lost some of his spiritual confidence because of that. And he is prone to bear the shame and to be depressed over what he's done in the past. And I think the whole Amnon and Tamar incident, all of that has only reinforced his weakness in this area now. Now, he's not horrendously weak, understand, but he definitely has sensitivity in this area. And so I believe that his guilt is still functioning in a way that he says, maybe God wants me out of here. Maybe this is part of God's judgment against me. And if that's the case, fine, let it be that way. Now, if God does want me back, he'll do it. But we're not taking the Ark of the Covenant with me. God stays in his capital. The king also said to Zadok the priest, "Are you not a seer?" Somebody who sees into the spirit world to receive messages from God. It's the ancient word for prophet. "Go back to the city in peace with your two sons, Ahimaaz, your son, and Jonathan, the son of Abiathar." So he's telling both priests, go back, resume your duties, continue interceding on behalf of the people of Israel, even with Absalom being the king, and take your two boys with you. But he wants to have them be a little bit of a spy on his behalf. "See, I'm going to wait at the fords of the wilderness," meaning down by the Jordan, down at the Jordan by the crossings of Jericho, "until word comes from you to inform me." So I'm going to go down. We're going to get down there by tomorrow. And I'm going to wait for a message from you what I should do next. Because at this point, he's not altogether certain. He just needs to get away from this area as fast as he can. And so heading down to the Jordan to cross over into eastern Israel is his best choice. So Zadok and Abiathar carried the Ark of God back to Jerusalem, and they remained there. But David went up the ascent of the Mount of Olives, weeping as he went, barefoot and with his head covered. So he has taken on the attitude and the form of a grieving, humbled petitioner of God. He doesn't even have his shoes on. And as he walks up to the top of the Mount of Olives, heading up and over it to go down into the Jordan Valley, somewhere probably near where Jesus ascended on high. This is what happens at that point. All the people who were with him covered their heads, and they went up, weeping as they went. And there it was told David, Ahithophel is among the conspirators with Absalom. So this is where he finds out that one of his top advisors, if not the top advisor, has joined the other side. And so David said, "Oh, he who is, please turn the counsel of Ahithophel into foolishness." So please make that wise guy give bad advice. And we'll actually see God carry out that prayer request in a very twisted way. Verse 32, as we're kind of closing up for today, while David was coming to the summit where God was worshipped. So again, we have another high place that is identified up on the top of the Mount of Olives, somewhere not very far from where Jesus ascended after his resurrection. So when they come to that point, behold, Hushai, the Archite, came to meet him with his coat torn and dirt on his head. So he's grieving. And David said to him, "If you go with me, you'll just be a burden to me," meaning you'll just be another mouth to feed. "But if you return to the city and say to Absalom, 'I'll be your servant, O king, as I've been your father's servant in time, so now I'll be your servant,' then you will be able to defeat for me the counsel of Ahithophel." So Hushai is another one of David's advisors. And David says, "I have a job for you. I need you to go convince Absalom not to follow the advice of Ahithophel."